It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, President Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and the stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know there's so much to celebrate, as we all know, regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you've had a wonderful October, beautiful weather, and we wish you and your family the best in the upcoming holiday season. I am pleased to welcome you to the November edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. Segment one will focus on the Northwest Tower Choir and the work of Dr. Stephen Town. In segment two, we feature Dr. Brian Lanier regarding the Northwest Madrilleers and his work in conducting that prolific group. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Dr. Stephen Town to All Things Northwest. Dr. Town, Professor of Music and Distinguished Faculty Awardee at Northwest, was educated at the University of North Texas and Indiana University. In 1986, he joined the music faculty at Northwest, where his teaching responsibilities include the Tower Choir, Applied Voice, Music Theory, and Oral Skills Training. Dr. Town has appeared in international, national, regional, and state conventions symposia as a conductor and as a singer. And you should also know that in 2012, Dr. Town published An Imperishable Heritage, British Choral Music from Perry to Dyson. He's published, ladies and gentlemen. He is well known throughout, not just locally and regionally, but nationally and internationally. And we'll talk about, you know, his career and what's been going on throughout this segment of All Things Northwest. Stephen, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jasinski.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, the Tower Choir. I mean, I know that's just a point of pride for the university, but certainly for you and students and somebody that have been connected to the Tower Choir. Talk about the history of the Tower Choir.
Well, you're quite right. I'm very proud of the group, and I feel very privileged to be able to conduct it. I've been conducting the group since 1999. I'm the fourth conductor of the group. Gil Whitney was first, then Byron Mitchell, and then Rick Weymouth. A previous organization existed earlier. It was created by Ralph Herzl, but it wasn't named the Tower Choir. So that's how I came to be associated with the group in 1999.
So interestingly, as you talk about the four conductors, I mean, that's quite a lineup of great conductors. But, you know, honestly, the Tower Choir has established a reputation of excellence. And there's so many great things to talk about at Northwest, obviously, but Tower Choir, you know, ranks up there. Talk about, you know, that legacy and that heritage and how you've tried to take that legacy and then expand upon it.
Well, certainly I watched my colleagues when they had the ensemble, and I've attempted to maintain the traditions that they established. But on top of that, I have my own personality, and I select the kind of literature I think that a university student should be singing. I want to pick arresting, challenging, and thrilling literature for them. And they certainly meet the challenge. And I think along with my colleague, Brian Lanier, we've really worked very good to create some wonderful choral ensembles in our department. And I'm really proud of his work and what we're doing together.
Well, I have to ask, you know, you talk about resting and challenging and those pieces that you select Talk about that for our listeners. What goes into that selection process?
Well, for me, being trained as a choral musician and a classical musician, I know a lot of literature. But during the summer times, I spend a great amount of every day just listening to literature, examining scores, and thinking in my mind of the singers I may have in the approaching academic year, and if that literature will fit their voices and their musical level. And then, of course, I'm trying to create programs that will take listeners on a journey. I want listeners to be someplace different at the end of our concerts than they were at the beginning of our concerts. There are many, many wonderful choral ensembles, but the choral ensembles that stand out are the ones that really convince an audience that they're singing from the heart, that they're singing arresting literature, and something different that audiences have never heard before.
It's interesting, Dr. Town, you talk about this whole journey piece and that you like to take those that are in the audience through a journey. And I assume, obviously, those that are in the choir go on their own journey, too. But in my time here at Northwest, when you go to a performance, you really are on that musical journey. So we certainly applaud you for that. Talk about the students. I presume that, you know, a gentleman like me just can't walk off the street and, you know, say, I want to be in the Tower Choir. But talk about the methodology to get into the Tower Choir.
Well, we do have an audition process. It's open to anyone who has a musical aptitude and a wonderful voice and wish to continue to express their God-given talent. And so we audition them and we select them in that way, and they become members of the group. They're all very devoted individuals to our choral ensembles. They learn a great amount of literature. Many of them are in three ensembles, and so they're really learning lots of literature. But that's good for them. They need to have a broad spectrum of different kinds of literatures. And those that don't choose to be professional musicians or teachers, still this is going to enrich their lives. And we think it's going to give them a dimension that can make them different people as they leave the university.
Are they all music majors?
No, they're not all music
majors.
So, right, No, they come from all majors, English majors, computer science majors. We have an animal science major currently, and the majority of them are music majors, BME or BA majors.
Okay, those that want to go into the profession or teach music,
yeah,
perhaps. So there's been so many accomplishments of the Tower Choir. I mean, students, alumni that are listening to this program, obviously, there's so many accomplishments. But kind of talk to us about a few of those, because you and I have talked on the streets, so to speak, about so many accomplishments around the university, 14 national championships the last 5 years across academics and athletics and so on. But these rank at the top as well. So talk about some of them.
Well, I'm not really sure that our audience realizes that our choral department every year is having an ensemble invited to sing in a state or regional or national conference. It's really quite astonishing what's occurring there. In terms of highlights for me, I remember a Tower Choir singing at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. We sang before a church service there, and what a thrill to sing in that wonderful building there. In 2011, the Tower Choir sang at the National Convention of the National Collegiate Choral Organization. That was held in Fort Collins. And the universities that were there were the University of Southern California, University of Kentucky, really large universities with a much larger student base than Northwest has. And yet here was Northwest, and we were right there with those ensembles. And in many cases, we compared more favorably than they did because our students are devoted and they really sing from the heart. they really do a good job. It's really about the students rather than the ensemble or the professors. They really make it happen.
Without question. As I travel and get a chance to see some of the performances, you also talk with alumni who have just deep, deep pride in their alma mater, but certainly in their time in the music discipline, or in this case, in the Tower Choir. Talk about some of the alumni interactions you might have with those, you know, emailing, calling, just kind of coming to a performance.
Well, we have lots of alumni who attend our performance when we're out on tours, whether or not we go on a 1 or 2 day tour in each term, or a spring break extended tour. Wherever they happen to be, alumni will come and observe a concert. Sometimes they travel to Maryville and will hear us. We do get telephone calls, emails, whatnot from alumni, and we occasionally seek their help through donations, and they're very good about doing that to help us with extracurricular activities and whatnot.
So. Sure. Well, you talk about traveling and being on the road. I know that there are a couple of upcoming performances that are important and certainly special to Northwest, to our students. Talk about those a little bit.
Yes. Well, the Tower Choir was selected again to sing at the Nebraska Music Educators Association, their state conference clinic that's going to occur in November. That comes up. The performance is November the 20th in the afternoon. And that's the biggest thing in the state of Nebraska in terms of institutionalized music. And we have a number of Nebraska singers in the Tower Choir, so they're very excited that they're going to be able to do that and represent Northwest there. And then the Tower Choir was selected to sing at the Missouri Music Educators State Conference in 2015. That will occur January the 29th. That's a 29th. That's a Thursday night. And that's certainly a very big deal in the state of Missouri. You've been there before when Tower Choir was there in 2010. The group will be singing for choral conductors and musicians, and that's a lot different than singing for general audiences. Choral conductors are much more critical of what you're doing. So those are two events that are going to be fantastic, and I'm very, very, very excited about it.
Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest here on KXEV KRNW. I'm your host, John Jasinski, speaking with Dr. Stephen Towne, Professor of Music and Distinguished Faculty Awardee here at Northwest. Dr. Towne's talking about our acclaimed Tower Choir. And Stephen, you're talking about Nebraska, Missouri, and I hearken back. I've been to the MMEA a couple of times now, and it's hard to put in words for our listeners what a convention like that's all about. There's thousands, literally thousands of people walking through Convention Hall in Tantera. Obviously, all kinds of performances every single day, every hour of every day. And as I've gone in to observe our performances, it's amazing to me. I am stopped by those that are not affiliated with Northwest in any way, shape, or form who say, your students, you know, act in such a great manner. Or I'll get stopped by alumni who say, it is such a thrill to have Northwest represented here. And then, you talk to the students who are just, you know, excited beyond description to be there and then perform. So, listeners, when we talk about the Nebraska concerts, the Missouri concerts, please understand that these really are at the highest level of competition. And as Stephen, as you're talking about, you know, these are conductors that are so-called grading, judging the competition. Yeah. So this is it's a kind of a high-pressure game, is it not?
It is. It is. But we hope that we'll be prepared, and I know we will be, and we'll make a good showing. And
can listeners show up to these kind of events, by the way?
Yes. They can register for the convention and then attend that. You have to register for a convention to attend those things. I receive so many parents passes or a participant passes, so it can happen that way.
And then the other option, obviously, is to check your university calendar
and look
at all the events that the Tower Choir is performing at Northwest. Well, let's kind of transition a bit. Stephen, you know, from a scholarly perspective, you and I have exchanged a few emails, and you've talked to me about your pursuits, and you might kind of describe a recent sabbatical that you had. It was very, very special for Northwest, but certainly for you individually. But it's then yielded some output that's pretty significant. So let's first talk about the sabbatical.
Well, I live the life of the mind, really and truly. I just enjoy so much being in the classroom, in the applied studio, and then the choral rehearsal hall. And to me, I think to be a good professor, someone that can really help my students, I need to try to learn as much as I can about music and about history and about, well, learning in general. And so I was fortunate enough that I was granted this sabbatical in the spring of 2014, last year, and was able to go to Cambridge University. I was awarded a visiting research fellowship, and so I went there to do research on, to complete a book on Rayfawn Williams. And while I was there, I was able to attend, at least two services a day, evensong, a morning song. There are 31 colleges at Cambridge University. Each one of them has holds religious services, and each one has a choral group that is scholarshiped, and the choirs are fantastic. So I was able to hear wonderful literature, get more literature for the Tower Choir, just see that milieu. It's so much different than what we have here. And now that was just student groups. I heard wonderful professional groups and all of that. Met wonderful people from around the world. I was a member of Clare Hall, which is a graduate college there. It's split off from Clare College in the 1960s because there was the graduate population, student population was growing exponentially at Cambridge. And they needed to have a college for graduate students. They made it a graduate college and also a place where international scholars could come and they could exchange ideas with the graduate students and with one another. So I met people from Italy and Germany and Oriental folk, and it was just really fabulous.
What's amazing, and I hope our listeners appreciate this, you know, we're talking about a teaching institution, Northwest Missouri State, and we're so very very deeply proud of our faculty who focus on student success, but in doing so, you know, have to take it upon themselves to, as you say, Dr. Towns, study music each and every day throughout the summer, or in this case, going over to Cambridge and being able to go through a sabbatical. It's awesome. I mean, it's awe-inspiring because what you're doing is focusing on excellence in your discipline, but then delivering that to our students. So you go to Cambridge, you obviously experience, I mean, that was great. I'm like, oh, I wish I could have tagged along for a couple of days there. But, you know, as you're there and thinking about your own research, kind of talk about how that's allowed you to finish up your most recent contribution, a book, and really talk about that a little bit.
Well, my interest in Rayfawn Williams really began a long time ago. When I was a boy, I was singing his music, and I didn't really know that it was his music. I sang church hymns in church. And later, as an undergraduate at the University of North Texas, I started singing his music. But at that time, most music in universities was Austro-Germanic-centric, really and truly. Later on, I came back to it. I did a research stint at Harvard University in 1991. It was called The Symphony After Beethoven, and I was reintroduced to Rayfawn Williams and his great first symphony, A C Symphony, and that kind of ignited my interest in him again. And in 1993, I went to Charterhouse, which is a public school in England, where this composer went as a boy. And I was able to go from Charterhouse to the British Museum, where his manuscripts, autographed manuscripts, were kept. And so I've been every summer or every other summer, I've been trying to go back, and I'll write a chapter here, a chapter there. And I really needed that sabbatical to kind of finish that process off. There are two manuscripts at the Cambridge University Library. Vaughan Williams's degree exercise as a Bachelor of Music recipient and his degree exercise as a Doctor of Music recipient. Those are two big choral works, and they've not been studied before, not been recorded before, and the manuscripts are kept there. And so I had to go there really to study them.
Wow. And so the book is done?
The book is done. It's being reviewed currently. It's being vetted. And, you know, all books go through a series of evaluations, and I hope that there will be little or no changes to it, but you never know what will happen.
Well, we look forward to a little book signing here in the near future. But from origin, from its start, and obviously you started singing Vaughan Williams music, you know, early on. But from an actual writing perspective, what's the start date to the end date? What's the length of completion?
Well, I suppose I would say that I started in 1993. I mean, if I do a chapter a summer or every other summer, I mean, there are other things. I have a personal life. Yeah. I have a domestic life.
Wow.
And you know,
we have other things
that we have to do. Yeah. So, you know, and toward the end, that accelerated and picked up. I would say the bulk of the work occurred the last 3 years
sure.
on that.
That's an amazing process, though, and I think it's testimony to obviously persistence, but also to the works that we read and kind of take for granted. You think about an author sitting down and writing, but you know, conceptualizing that in 1993 and then kind of working on it summer here, a couple of summers later, et cetera. Amazing process, but we look forward to the work and seeing the work and obviously celebrating
Thank you. Your
good work. Thank you. Dr. Towne, in closing here, as you think about the future of Tower Choir and your teaching and conducting and so on, talk to our listeners about what you see on the horizon for the Tower Choir.
Well, as I started off this interview saying that I'm just feel very privileged to conduct that group and very proud of all the students. My vision would be that we would be able to recruit more singers, instrumentalists, keyboardists, musicians in general to our Department of Fine and Performing Arts and Music area, because the level of teaching is astonishing that's going on in our area. And at our university, there are so many better teachers than me. I'm quite astonished at what I see in classrooms and for my colleagues. And so, you know, I'm just trying to get better and do a better job every day. And I see Dr. Lanier and I continuing these activities, trying to place our ensembles in venues and in forums where the work that we're doing at Northwest can be seen, debated, and celebrated. You know, we can attract students that way. We can attract interest in our university that way in terms of music. And so that's my general idea of what I'd like to see happen in the future.
Well, it's well said, because you're talking about improving the craft of teaching and certainly learning on an everyday kind of basis and focusing our students on student success, but also providing a venue for celebration and for, I guess I should say, celebrating fine and performing arts, because our listeners of KXCB, KRNW can come in and enjoy the fruits of your labor and certainly the work of our students. So it's just an awesome environment.
And certainly I would invite everyone to come out to any of these choral performances, because I think these groups are jewels at Northwest. And I think people would be surprised if they haven't gone to a choral concert since they were in high school or in university or in recent years. I think they would be quite surprised at what's happening.
We have many jewels at Northwest, the Tower Choir, led by Dr. Stephen Towne, certainly is part of that family of jewels. Dr. Stephen Towne, thanks for joining All Things Northwest.
You're welcome. Thank you.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Dr. Brian Lanier. We'll discuss the Northwest Madrilleers. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXEV KRNW.
Support for KXEV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to avoid power lines by lowering augers and elevators to the lowest level, less than 14 feet, before transporting them. More information is at www.ahec.coop. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Clarinda Regional Health Center. Celebrating its 75th anniversary, CRHC has been providing health care in Southwest Iowa and Northwest Missouri since 1939. More at clarindahealth.com.
Northwest Missouri State University offers many degrees in communications. Organizational communications major Brett Friedenberg chose Northwest for two reasons.
One is that I believe that it is the best place to prepare for my future. I know we have a great faculty here in the communication department, along with great students too. The Peking Bearcats just went to the national championship and won that. So that's a really good thing to be challenged by and just to continue to learn.
Friedenberg will graduate May 2016.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from United Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Missouri and Iowa. United Electric reminds you that sealing air leaks and gaps in the walls of your home's outside basement walls will prevent energy waste this winter. More information is at www.ueci.coop.
Welcome back to the November edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Dr. Brian Lanier. Brian Lanier is an associate professor of choral studies at Northwest Missouri State. He holds degrees from Stetson University, Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and the Florida State University. Prior to his appointment at Northwest, Dr. Lanier taught secondary vocal music for 16 years. He conducts the University Chorale, Madrilleers Celebration, teaches classes in music education, and volunteers research and instructional time in local school music programs. I should note that under his direction, the Madrilleers have been invited to perform really throughout the country, and we'll talk about not just the country, but certainly in the region and their invited performances. He has conducted concerts in France, Hungary, Italy, England, Germany, and Austria. Dr. Brian Lanier, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, let's first talk about teaching at Northwest and conducting. I'll get to the conducting in a second, but you've been here at Northwest for quite a while. If you kind of talk about your teaching style, kind of just set the stage for our listeners as we begin talking about the Madrilleers.
Well, like most folks at the university, and particularly in the Department of Music, the Fine and Performing Arts area, we wear many hats. I get to do many things, and some people may think that that's a difficulty. I think that that's actually a strength of what I get to do, because I get to do academic classes, I teach conducting classes, I conduct a couple of choirs, and also teach private voice, and also get to dabble in a few other things like the university musical and Yuletide Feast and many productions. It is a busy time, but there's never a dull moment.
No, and you know, that eclectic kind of slate of duties, you know, obviously allows all of us to not have the same repetitive day or a boring day necessarily. So we thank you for your work, Brian. And let's talk about conducting. You know, I think about the Madrilleers, and I watch the Madrilleers. I know our listeners celebrate the work of our Madrilleers, the performances. But talk about the conducting style. If you can describe your conducting style, what would that be?
Well, the conducting style that I tend to use or apply to any particular group is directed toward whatever piece of music we might be performing.
to elaborate on that, each piece of music, if we choose a piece from the Renaissance or choose a piece from the Baroque period, the classical period, or even a contemporary piece, each piece is unique in its demands for performance practice, as we might say. In other words, if we're doing the Vivaldi Gloria, which we'll be doing soon, we can talk about that in a little while, there's a certain style that is expected for the articulation, for the way the piece is done, as opposed to, say, a contemporary piece where different kinds of sounds might be elicited from the choir.
That's interesting, because as you talk about those various periods, you know, the Renaissance and Baroque and so on, from a listening point of view, you kind of go to a performance and say, you know, great performance. From a practice point of view, as you do, you select your own scores or the music, or do the students help you select, or how does that go?
No, I am responsible for all of that selection.
So as you select something from the Renaissance, for example, you have to have a mind's eye towards what's this going to be asking of our students, of you as a conductor. Is that true?
Absolutely, and that kind of boils over into my own philosophy of music and music education for our students at Northwest. I think it's incumbent on the conductor and the choral teacher to give our students a broad spectrum of musical styles. In other words, not just concentrate on, say, 20th century or 21st century, or on the other far spectrum, just Renaissance or medieval music. Our students are going to be going out into the schools, into public schools, and hopefully some of them into universities or even professional organizations where they would conduct. And it's important for them to not only study music from many different periods, but to perform that music. So in the rehearsal process, we have conversations about this. We have conversations about this piece should sound like this, the articulation for this piece should be so, the articulation for this next piece. If we're doing a piece by Brahms, it shouldn't sound like a piece by Bach. And so those are real practice, best practice ideas that we try to apply and teach to our students so they're better informed and more intelligent about what they're going to do.
Listeners, I've had the chance and the pleasure to watch Dr. Lanier in action, and as he's describing allowing our students to understand and asking our students to understand not just the theory behind the piece, but also practicing the piece and putting it in motion so that when they go out and teach, they understand what's behind that. I liken that to some of our previous programs. We've talked about emergency disaster management at Northwest. We've talked about athletics. We've talked about education and those that are at the Horace Mann Laboratory School. And I think the similarities across all of these disciplines, so to speak, is that, you know, this is all about not just the if I can use the term old school teaching methodology, I'll just tell you what to do. But it's really setting the stage, setting the foundation, and then saying, now let's put it into practice. Mm-hmm. Professional-based education is a term I'm using recently, saying you need to make sure that you understand what this means in the real-world environment.
Well, that's true, and to extend that even farther, when our students go out to teach or perform, but to isolate the teaching idea, the students are going to go to different kinds of schools. Some may go to a large school. Some may go to a middle-sized school. Some may go to a very small school. And it's important for the student slash new teacher to have an idea about what's going to work in this setting.
Well, and it's pretty obvious that you've had some successes at getting our students to understand how to go out and be successful. Let's talk about the choral group and the recent year's successes. I mean, we've had sustained and repeated success. That's no accident. So let's talk about some of those successes.
Well, as you mentioned, how long I've been at Northwest, this is my 13th year. So I arrived in 2002. And the Madrilleers have had the pleasure of performing at some high-profile events. The Missouri Music Educators Association is the state organization for the National Association for Music Education, which is the state organization is part of the national organization. And each year we have a convention, a conference at Tantara Resort in Osage Beach in Missouri. So there's a process by which we can audition, send in audition recordings to be selected for performing at that event. So the Madrilleers performed there in 2006 and 2012 and 2013. What's interesting about that is that when you are selected for one of those conferences, there's a four-year waiting period. They just like to keep it open so that there's a little more fairness across the board for other schools to be selected. For each of the events at Tantara, there are typically only three university or college choirs that are invited each year. So in 2012, we sang there, and that means we wouldn't really have been eligible till 2016. However, since 2013 was the 75th anniversary for MMEA, the officers decided to waive that four-year rule and to just open it up again to anyone in the state, which basically kind of raised the stakes a little bit. And so the Madrilleers were invited to sing again in 2013. So that's, some say, unprecedented that we would have done that in back-to-back years. On a larger playing field, the American Choral Directors Association has divisional conventions every other year, and Madrilleers had the invitation to sing in 2008 in Kansas City for the SWACTA conference there. And interestingly enough, they also had the same four-year rule, so we were only eligible again in 2012, and we auditioned and got selected again. So basically, that was kind of a back-to-back thing, too. So we've had really good success, and I think that there are a number of reasons for that. First of all, it's the quality of the students that we have here. They really do, they really work very hard. They accept the challenges that we put in front of them, and then we work together to bring them to the point where they are able to demonstrate their expertise. And then when people on the outside, shall we say, the vetting organizations, they recognize that. And so you don't always get that, but we have had, let's say, some very good success, and we're very happy about that.
Well, those successes certainly are we can't take them for granted, I guess, is what I would say. And you're right. In some cases, they're unprecedented. I've had a chance to be at the MMEA, went down to Dallas and saw the group, et cetera. And so, you know, we're talking about prolific performances from an academic point of view. It's hard to put it in context because it really is at the pinnacle of a profession. But I know our listeners understand that. And as you're listening to All Things Northwest here on KXCV KRNW, I think it's just something to take a breath and say, thank you, Dr. Brian Lanier. Thank you, our fine and performing arts faculty, because it's raising the stakes, but it's also providing awesome performances here for a regional audience. And you've got a couple of performances up and coming that our listeners should be thinking about attending.
Absolutely. On November 13th, the Madrilleers will perform a concert in the Charles Johnson Theater. The pinnacle piece, or shall I say, the large piece that we'll be doing is the Gloria by Antonio Vivaldi. Last year, the Madrilleers also performed a singular piece. We did the Bach Magnificat with the orchestra, and we're bringing an orchestra in, hiring some orchestral players to come in for this Vivaldi performance. And this has been something I've tried to do for the past couple of years. Often our concerts are a collection of shorter pieces, octavos or motets or shorter pieces, and we design and develop a program on that idea. And that's absolutely a standard way that we do things. In fact, when we go to conferences such as MMEA or SWACTA, that's kind of the expectation that you do a varied program. However, the thing that we've been lacking a little bit here has been doing complete works. In fact, just the other day, one of my students who's in the choir, he's really noticed that, and he really appreciated that we were doing complete total works. So it takes a bit of doing, and it takes a bit of funding, which we appreciate. We get some support on that as well. And so that enables us to just take a little different approach and expand the forces a bit. On that concert, we will also be doing a piece by Benjamin Britten, the Hymn to St. Cecilia, and six chansons by Paul Hindemith. Some people are scared by Paul Hindemith. They think, oh, it's serialism and 12-tone rows. And he did do a lot of that, but not in these pieces. They're quite lovely, and people will really enjoy them.
Well, I know you when you select pieces, it's really to help take us on a journey, tell a story. And like you said, Brian, challenge our students. And so that Gloria, for example, will certainly be a challenging piece.
It is a challenging piece, and it features some soloists in the work, just as the Bach did last year. And we just draw the students, the soloists, straight out of the choir. And they just step up and they perform it, and they meet the challenge, and they do a wonderful job.
Well, we invite listeners there to the concert November 13th right here on the campus of Northwest Missouri State University. Listeners, you may have had a chance to attend a Yuletide feast over the recent years. If you have not had that pleasure, really would encourage you to put aside one or both dates of December 5 and December 6. That's our Yuletide feast. Brian, can you talk about the Yuletide feast? What happens at the actual performance, but the run-up to it and the practice for that performance?
Well, the Yuletide feast is just basically a blast. the students love it. They look forward to it. And this is actually, believe it or not, our 41st Yuletide feast coming. Of course, I haven't been here for all of those, but have certainly enjoyed continuing and maintaining that tradition. We tweak it a little bit here each year just to make it a little more interesting. The lead up to it is quite extensive, from the selection of music and then costumes that have to be ordered or built or altered, and that takes some doing, and we have students that help out with that too. And the students just take so much leadership in this. It's really fantastic. They do a lot of the work. Well, they do. I couldn't possibly do all the work. And so we just assign the work out for publicity, for ticket sales, for costumes, for decorating. We turn the upstairs, the ballroom in the Jones Student Union into basically a 16th century castle. It's really fantastic. And so then there's the rehearsals for the recorder group. There's the rehearsal for the brass quintet. And so all of these forces come together to present what is an amazing evening of music and fun, and really a great time for families to get together. We really appreciate the support and the fantastic job that Aramark does for us for Yuletide Feast. The head chef that we've had for the past few years, Brad Jackson, has transformed the food level and the quality and the fantastic items that he brings to the Yuletide Feast. And it's really, really fantastic, and folks will really enjoy his work too. And Aramark does a wonderful job for us, and we appreciate all the work that they do as well.
Brian, there's no doubt when you talk about the Yuletide Feast being a blast, without question, it is a blast. And so as an audience member, you know, get your tickets, because those, you know, well attended, tickets go fast. How can listeners obtain a ticket or two?
Well, Yuletide Feast tickets are available on the website. In fact, if you go to the university homepage, I think there's an icon over to the right that starts talking about that. But you can certainly go to the Fine and Performing Arts page and click on, there's a spot there to click on Yuletide Feast, and it comes up. You can order tickets online and pay with a credit card, or you can send in a check, or you can come to the Fine and Performing Arts office and get them there.
Well, we encourage our listeners, I say buy one or two, but buy 10 tickets, but get your tickets soon, because the Yuletide Feast really sells out fast, and it's a great event. Dr. Lanier, as we think about the springtime, you know, here we're talking about a couple of fall/winter performances, but one of my favorite events at the university, you know, it's kind of a scary thing to say, because once I say one of my favorite events, somebody says, oh, you forgot about my event.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of favorite events here at Northwest. Right. Let me just go on record and say that. But truly, one of those just awesome, incredible events is the Celebration Show Choir in the spring. And I think I had to miss it this past spring. Perhaps travel, took me away. But it's one of those events that it's a can't miss, so to speak. Talk about that transition and how that all takes place, because it's that event is just incredible.
It is incredible. Again, the preparation for that begins in the fall. The performance is the last Friday of the spring term, just before finals begin. And we begin in the fall, through measuring costumes, ordering costumes, selecting music, securing choreographers, and then we come back in January and we have a whole weekend where we begin choreography. And then we just start that process of daily rehearsals. The show is basically about 85 minutes of nonstop action. There are large group numbers, and then my idea is to design the show and to give every individual student an opportunity to perform not only in the large group setting, but also in either solo, duet, small ensembles. And the show is just kind of nonstop. We have a fantastic band that plays with us, and they're from the instrumental area. And we've had people from the theater area, students who have done the lighting for the show. And it's just been an amazing event, very entertaining, lots of laughs, some poignant songs, but mostly just the audience goes kind of crazy. They really love it.
You know, you talk about that, Brian, and I think about attitude, and I think about pleasure, and I think about taking our listeners, our audience members, on some kind of path towards self-reflection, but enjoyment. And as I think about Yuletide Feast, as I think about Madrilleers performing, or in this case, really looking ahead to the Celebration Show Choir, this is all about attitude. It's about enjoyment. It's about bringing our audience members the enjoyment of a lot of hard work that goes into all of that. So please accept gratitude, thanks on my behalf and on behalf of so many that have enjoyed this throughout the many, many years.
Well, I appreciate that. And it is for the community. Again, the element of educational instruction is always at the center of what we do with the show choir, because many of these students are going to go out and have those responsibilities, either for maybe doing a show choir at a school or certainly having their involvement with a high school musical production of shows at that level. And they get to see how we start a show and how we build a show from the ground up. And it's a lot of fun, and we appreciate the support. And the community and university support has been really fantastic.
You know, Brian, we can talk about all of the great works here at Northwest and certainly the work of our fine and performing arts faculty in preparing students to go out into the workforce, and that's what we do. But part of that is getting our students into the K-12 environment and teaching. There's been a lot written about, researched, discussed regarding the state of music education across K-12. And, you know, I think all of us are concerned about the support for the fine and performing arts in the K-12. Well, talk about what you see on a practical level in preparing our students, but especially the state of music education in the K-12 environment.
Well, there's no doubt that we're in challenging times, and I always think about education as a pendulum. And the pendulum swings one way, and the pendulum swings the other way. And we can go back as far as the 1950s when Sputnik was put up and the impact that that had on music and music education, and how suddenly the United States went toward, oh, we've got to put more money toward science. And then that got a little bit better once we landed a man on the moon. And now things swing back and forth. And I still believe that music and music education is very strong, very healthy in not only Missouri, but in the United States. Definitely there have been some shifts. We see the demographics changing in the United States, and let's just focus on Missouri. There are school districts that are merging. In other words, this school will merge with that school because of shifting populations, people moving from rural areas into more suburban or city areas. And so that does change things a bit, but I always think that if a student moves from here and goes to there, that that student still needs someone to teach them how to sing and how to play. So music has been proven ceaselessly the positive impact that music has on students, not only academically, but socially. I can speak from personal experience. I taught high school for 16 years in Orlando, and some students came to school because of the music class. They got through the other classes and they graduated and they were successful, but music was that glue that kept them going. I'm sure the same thing happens in sports or other areas, but for music, I still believe that it's vital to maintain our connection to and our support for music education. When students come to my office, they will to interview. They'll be sitting in my office with their parents, and they think they want to be a music teacher, or they think they want to, they're not sure what they want to do. And I look at them and I say, what do you really want to be when you grow up? Well, I don't know. And the parents are looking, because this is an important question, because they're thinking about a job. And I say, what do you want to do? What do you want to get up and do every day? Do what you love. Love what you do. And I still believe that if you prepare, then you will have a job. I say, look, this is my 29th year of teaching music. I haven't missed a day of work. And I think that if we continue to put that positive message out there, that students will respond to that. That's not being Pollyanna. I still believe that music education will always be a part of a student's education in public school.
Well, I would concur. Music education is so critical. And listeners, if you don't know Dr. Brian Lanier, please get to know him, because you'll understand when you talk to him, he loves what he does. Thank you for providing that fun, providing that enjoyment, providing challenges to our students. Thanks for what you do every day in the name of student success, Dr. Brian Lanier.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Dr. Stephen Towne and Dr. Brian Lanier from Northwest Missouri State University. Thanks, too, to our producer, Ben Nully. He's a student here at Northwest. And thanks to KXCV-KRNW station manager, Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Jasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV-KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. This program is written and produced by multimedia journalism major Ben Nully. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.